welcome to another episode of The Last Post Radio Show. You're with Greg T. Ross, and with 2 million Australians per day accessing podcasts, glad to have you along as number 2,000,001. And the theme for today's episode is transition. We're speaking with Matt Galton, and we'll learn more about Matt in just a moment. But transition can be difficult for veterans, made easier by an increasing amount of Australian companies that are employing veterans as a priority to access veterans' experience in certain fields. Matt Galton, you've got quite a story. Welcome to the Last Post Radio Show.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Pleasure to be here with you.
Matt, one looks at the whole business concerning transition, and it can be difficult, it can be relatively easy, depending on those around you, those that are willing to help, and your own mindset. But before we go into that, Matt, if you just let listeners know, you've got quite a history, and it's, I guess you joined the ADF, what, as a 16-year-old?
I was 16 and a half there, that's right. I was straight out of school.
So you graduated from Duntroon in, what, 1993, Matt?
Yeah, that's right. So I went to the Defence Academy straight out of school in 89, for whatever reason, which I don't quite recollect well now why I chose this, but started off in the Navy and then transferred across to Army very early on in my time at the Defence Academy. And then, yeah, went on with all my Army colleagues from Adford to Duntroon in 93, yeah. And then graduated there as a lieutenant into the Royal Australian Engineer Corps.
Yes, that's right. That's right, indeed. And look, you've got quite a history here of working overseas for the good of the communities that you've been employed to serve with. And of course, East Timor, I mean, you were at Townsville, but East Timor, the Solomon Islands. And Matt, I guess Israel, Syria and Lebanon, what was that experience like?
Oh, that was a pretty special time over there. So I was there for 18 months, a while ago now, or in fact, 2 decades ago now. So I went over there 2001 through to 2003, and it looked at a fantastic time there. I think it's Defence still has this same secondment that they do with UNSO, which is the United Nations Truce Supervision Organisation. And for many, many, many years now, the ADF has sent, it used to be all exclusively Army, but I understand there has been Navy and Air Force have been part of the contingent now, but generally around a dozen UNMOs, which is United Nations Military Observer. And then you spend either between 12 and 18 months over there with that mission. I was very fortunate that when over there, the other 10 or 11 people with me were, many of them were Duntroon classmates of mine. So we all knew each other very well. So there's great camaraderie between just the Australian contingent, but also from all the other nations represented there, from militaries right around the world. It was, yeah, quite a unique experience. Great chance to, you know, meet people from other walks of life. I had a fantastic time living in Israel and then Syria for the last 6 months. And yeah, it's amazing. So it's, you know, I watch on seeing what's been happening over in that region for the last many years. And, you know, in particular, obviously in the last 12, 24 months, it's quite, you know, sad to see what's been happening there, because when I was there, it was reasonably quiet. There was things going on, but you know, everyone was very welcoming to me. I just made a lot of close friends, learned a lot about the cultures over there. So yeah, good memories from my time there.
Yeah, well, Matt, look, it must be quite a special part of your life, and a brilliant part of being in the ADF too is to get the opportunity to travel to such places. Afghanistan in 2009, Queensland Flood Assistance, Nauru, different programs in around the Dampier Peninsula and remote South Australia. And then, Matt, you were awarded the Distinguished Service Cross.
Yeah, so that was from my time over in Iraq. I was the inaugural commander of Task Group Taji, which is a contingent of 400. It was a mix of 300 Australians and 100 Kiwis that were with us, with the mission being there to train up elements of the Iraqi army. This was back at the time when ISIS had taken over a large swathe of the country, and in particular Mosul. So the mission there was to assist the coalition in training up the Iraqi military to be able to, you know, take back sovereignty of their country. And it didn't happen as fast as what everyone would have liked, but it did happen. So that was a good experience over there too. Very satisfying seeing the impact that the training had on the Iraqi army. They were very, very, very happy with and very Yeah, they're very gracious in welcoming us in there, and they're very grateful for the training they got. Actually, one of the most rewarding things there was a number of the battalion commanders of the units that we trained kept in touch with the contingent after they'd been up in Mosul and giving us a bit of feedback on, which parts of the training we should emphasize more, maybe different things we could change to help them out better. So yeah, great experience over there. I mean, I know it sounds trite to say it, but it feels a bit funny getting a Distinguished Service Cross for that when it's, clearly there's no wasn't just my effort, it was that the whole contingent that performed really well there. And it was a real pleasure to work with our Kiwi partners as well. Always really love operating with them. They're very, very like-minded, I think, to Australian Army. So we fit in really well, and great mission.
Yes, indeed, Matt, and the Anzac tradition, as they say. Look, from an outsider's point of view, you're doing a lot of good work with good people over in Iraq, etc. But what was the tension like?
Where we were, I mean, we weren't out training the Iraqis in the field, so it wasn't like we were doing mentoring on the battlefield as such. It was training on a base. So look, that base was quite a secure base. There were some elements of some Shia militia groups were on there that we just had to be conscious they're on the base. But I got a very good rapport with the base commander there, and look, I knew full well that he was determined to make sure that our task group remained safe and well on his base. So I think he did what he needed to do in the background to make sure that there was no incidents there, and it wasn't. All the Iraqi army that I met and worked with were fantastic. We did see a few of the militia groups there and had a chat to them from time to time, but no issues there. So no, look, we're well looked after over there on a secure base. So yeah, different missions that have been done in Afghanistan where there's been mentoring done in the field,
Yes.
that this was all training done on the base. So yeah, bit of a different environment to how the training was done in Afghanistan.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And we're talking to Matt Galton and about transition from service to the civilian life. Matt, you left the ADF, you became part of the many that decide to leave at a certain time in their lives and then return to the civilian life, including civilian work, workplace. Look, I suppose there's a lot of things to learn. How was your transition? I mean, you obviously at some stage you left the ADF, and I guess what would you advise? You sought advice initially when you left?
Oh yeah, I did definitely. Look, I joined with no view that I would spend any more than a few years in the military. I thought, oh, this all looks interesting. I'll give that a crack for a few years. But as each posting came and went, I was thoroughly enjoying myself. And before I knew it, it was 3 decades of my life in the army. And I'd enjoyed it all. But everyone's time's going to come to an end. Not everyone's going to be the chief of army. So I think you need to pick your time to go. Which I was, fortunate enough to be able to do. So yeah, look, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of everyone else that does transition out of army to civilian life, because everyone's going to have their own unique experience. I'm sure though there's a lot of commonality in things that people discover and the emotions they go through. But as I said, I can only speak for myself. So look, my last posting, I was fortunate to get that job. So it was a role looking after the Defence's National Infrastructure Program. So the nature of the role was such that I had quite a lot of dealings with the civilian construction industry, both on the consultant side and also the contractor side. So the reason I say that is that a lot of that last job I did for 4 years, a lot of engagement with industry. So in a positive way, I felt like I already had one foot out the door. Whilst I'm still wearing uniform, it was a very industry-facing role. So for me, that meant I knew I was going at the end of that posting too. So I had 4 years to warm up to it. It was a very different style of job to the very operationally focused, training focused, very military focused jobs I'd done before. So it was all like almost like stepping through a halfway house before getting out fully from the military. So for me, that was reasonably smooth at the time, but yeah, I did certainly seek a lot of advice. So that was the first thing I started doing. I was given a bit of a nudge by a couple of people that it's probably time I needed to turn my mind to what would happen when I left. And this was at around about September of my final year. So yeah, look, I made sure I thoroughly, exhaustively used the network that I had of both people in industry that didn't have a military background, People that had left the military very early in their careers, also people that had left more senior, such as I did, just to, you know, get their thoughts on what they experienced, and just, you know, listen to what they went through, be it good, bad, or indifferent, and try to take from that what I could. So, yeah, I'm very grateful to everyone that was all very gracious with their time, to be able to, you know, so I could pick their brain to see how they did it. And as I said, everyone's got a unique experience. I did find there was commonality between a lot of the things that a lot of the people said to me, but yeah, really good to just hear from what other people had gone through, because, you know, I don't think there was anything I was going to encounter that someone else might not have before. So I thought I'd make the most of bending people's ear, which was very helpful for me.
Yes, wise to do that too, Matt, to access advice when it's there for you. And certainly, as you say, a commonality, but with each individual perhaps giving a little bit of a taste of what they went through. So well done there. I guess also, Matt, with the Army experience being quite unique, what don't try and replicate the Army experience. Would you advise that also to those in transition?
Yeah, look, I think when you're leaving, there's a lot of great things about being in the Army, or just being in the military in general. Well, of course, there is, otherwise people would just go straight away and you wouldn't stay. But yeah, I think, though, that the more you love it, being serving, the more you probably want to try to replicate that experience outside of the military. And it's not something you can directly do. I mean, the military is not the only people that provide service to the community. Obviously, there's police, there's ambulance, there's firefighters, there's civilian public servants. There's a lot of ways to provide community service. So that aspect of it, giving back to your community and helping those around you, you can do that in many other professions, but they're all, nothing's going to exactly replicate how you feel and the satisfaction you get from serving in uniform. So I think, you know, my advice would be if you're looking to replicate that environment and have all the same feelings and experiences, obviously you're not going to be able to do that. So you just need to be prepared for every other environment you're going to walk into. There'll be some similarities, but there's always going to be a lot of differences. And I think it's good just to accept that straight away, because if you want to continue the same experience, the only way to do that is to stay in. And no one's going to stay in all their life. You're going to transition out at some point. So if you want to try to have that same sense of service, there's certainly other places to do it, but it's always going to feel a bit different though.
Yeah, that's good. And I guess also with an increasingly large amount of Australian businesses giving the employment of veterans as a priority, I guess, to access the experience.
So look, whilst the military is a unique environment to be in, there are a lot, like a hell of a lot, of the skills, experiences, capabilities you have. There's a lot of crossover where, you know, your experiences and skills are readily transferable into multiple other industries. So I think when you're looking at, you know, selling yourself, so to speak, or, you know, promoting yourself to show what value you can bring to another sector, another industry, another company, it's important to show that what you've done in the military is transferable. There'll be some employers out there where they may well know that, because they may have veterans in senior positions there that intuitively understand what it is a veteran at any rank level that they leave can bring. But there's going to be many times when you may wish to join a company or join a sector where they don't have a big understanding of that, and you need to be able to describe that in clear detail without using jargon and without assuming knowledge of what an employer knows or doesn't know. So, you know, there'll be employers out there, you could tell them you were a brigadier in the Army, and they're going to say, so what? Or you say you're a corporal in the Army, and they won't know what that means. So being able to describe that in terms that aren't military jargon terms, but showing what you can bring to another organisation is important to be able to do.
Yeah, I guess it must be difficult too sometimes, Matt, without wanting to put too fine a point on it. But, of course, in service, you'd have your own language.
Oh, yeah, you do. And you don't realise how much of that you use as well. So it's very easy to slip into that. So, yeah, you certainly want to kick that habit as fast as you can. Get rid of the acronyms and speak a bit more like a normal person rather than what you're used to doing day to day.
Well, yeah. I've had no trouble understanding you since we first met, so it's wonderful. And look, I guess I remember too in a conversation you did say, if you could just explain this a little more for listeners, Matt, we spoke about transition. You said don't let people assume. What did that entail?
So I had a this came up. I didn't I was think about this the other day when I knew we were going to be chatting today. So I was just casting my mind back to some of the experiences I had soon after getting out. And one of them in particular, it was after my first gig outside. I was there on a break, which I'm about to finish next week, but on a break of 9 months. And then I realized after about 6 months, righto, I do need to start turning my mind again to finding something to do. So I had a meeting with a fairly senior dude from an organization I had a fair interest in, and had a real good chat. And he was very helpful, actually. He wanted to get me in touch with some other contacts he had, because I was interested in trying to sort of get away from the defense sector just to get a different experience. And he had a chat to a colleague of his that was fairly high up in a fairly large organization that may have had a lot of opportunities there. And he was talking to him while I was in the room, so I could hear what was coming back on the other end. And I'll put this in context. This was, they're both veterans, so they've both been in service. I think both had got out sort of in mid-level or I think they were reasonably senior. And the question his colleague asked was, is he institutionalized? And I could hear it come through the phone. And the guy whose office I was in, he knew for well I could hear it. And he looked at me with a bit of a smirk and then said to his colleague, no, I don't think he is. And that was that. And I didn't think much of it. I just had a chuckle to myself. But later on, I thought, yeah, that is something that's important to remember, that people may think that. So, you know, I think there's maybe an assumption out there that the longer you've stayed in the military, the more you have been institutionalized. And I put that in inverted commas, by the system there. As I was thinking about it, though, I thought, well, I personally don't think I was institutionalized too heavily. Maybe I was, I don't know. That's the thing, I suppose. If you are institutionalized, you probably didn't realize it. But then it's not inherently a bad thing, I don't think, because then I thought, well, what does being institutionalized by the military mean? Maybe it's mean you've had a very strong set of ethics has been sort of inculcated into how you do your business. Maybe it's given you a great amount of resilience. Maybe it's given you a respect for authority. Maybe it's had you used to taking directions, maybe questioning them, but once the decision's made, to crack on and do what the organisation wants to do. So the more I thought about it, the more I thought this institutionalised business,
they may be seen as good points
That you get. Well, yeah. So, I mean, my point there being, don't always let that be a negative. Being the word itself just, I think, immediately has negative connotations. But I think when you pick it apart a bit and see what it actually means, and, you know, what someone's mindset and way of doing business might have become from spending a lot of time in the military, it's not all bad necessarily. As long as you're thinking about what you're doing and why you're doing it, your way of doing business might not necessarily need to be turned on its head to be effective in an organisation outside of the military.
Yeah, well said too, Matt. And of course, those points that you raised about, in inverted commas, institutionalised, actually would probably make for a better person, I would imagine. So it's not all bad at all. And I guess on top of that too, as part and parcel of all the advice that you've given, is the bottom line is be prepared for the impact.
Yeah, look, definitely. I mean, as I'd said earlier, I felt I was well prepared to have a relatively smooth ride, having done that last role I did, where I was warming up to the fact that I was going to be leaving soon. So it wasn't as traumatic, perhaps, or like tearing the Band-Aid off as what it's been for some others. But I remember my wife at the time said, look, don't you go underestimating how this is going to feel on your last day. This has been your entire life. And yeah, look, I like to think I wasn't too much of again, inverted commas, AJ. I had a life outside of the army and I could leave it behind at the end of the day. There'd be phone calls late at night and I'd be thinking about things all the time, but I could, you know, operate outside of the army and didn't define fully who I was. So I thought, no, I'll be fine. But my wife did say, don't underestimate what this will feel like for you. And of course she was right. The day I left, I didn't think about it. And it's probably only been after it was a good year or even 2 years after I left, I thought, yeah, okay, I do miss a lot about what I was doing in the military, and it's not something I'm going to go back to. I mean, you know, maybe I might do reserve time one day, but I don't really have an intention to. But yeah, I think just being prepared for the fact that if you're determined that you are leaving and you're going to go out and pursue a different career and never go back, if it's been a long period of your life that you spend in there or even a short period, just being prepared for the fact that that's something that's now behind you. You won't forget it, but it's now, you know, you've now moved on. And at some point in time, you'll realize it's a fairly big thing that I think for anybody serving in the military, it, you know, it is a big part of your life. It's naturally going to be from the nature of service means that it's a large part of your life. And yeah, just being prepared for the fact that it's different when you leave, and it's you probably will miss it. If you left on good terms, you're probably going to miss it.
Yeah, well, with the advice that you've given listeners, I assume that it would be made a bit easier by listening to those very points that you've outlined, Matt Galton, and thank you very much for doing that. You got some time away from the military. You got some time away from work. What do you get up to? I know you've got a wonderful four-year-old son. What about the BMX? What's happening there?
Oh, yeah, well, I don't know, maybe I'm just projecting what I'd like to be doing now onto my son, but no, he seems to have, he's quite a mad bike rider. He loves his bike. So we took him down to the Pine Rivers BMX Club, a local BMX club here, and he was quite in awe watching these kids go around at 1,000 miles an hour on the BMXs going over the jumps. And I said, well, do you want to give it a go, mate? And he did. So, yeah, he's now got his BMX racer. I don't remember the BMXs being as high speed as when I was a kid, but apparently they are now. So you need a BMX for different styles as well. So he's got a racing BMX and goes for it. So yeah, wow. It's good. So I mean, he's getting a big kick out of that. I enjoy going down there. I have found, which has been excellent. I mean, you do get a really tight knit network of mates when you're serving. But now with, you know, I have left my run late in life, having a 4-year-old near 5-year-old when I'm on the bad side of, well, I shouldn't say bad, on the other side of 50. But yeah, just a whole new group of friends that you get to meet from, you know, your kids' parents, your kids' friends' parents. Yeah. And then also down at things like this BMX club where, you know, it's just a whole nother social network that you form, which has been great. So yeah, I think my hobbies really have circulated around looking after my little guy and trying to make sure that he gets the opportunity to try out as many, you know, sports activities as he likes. And I've been lucky enough to be able to spend a fair bit of time with him doing that, which has been great.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic, Matt? That is absolutely fantastic. And as fate has it, my twin brother Craig had a son, Harrison, when he was about your age too. So that's turned out to be a wonderful, wonderful thing. I guess too, it rekindles perhaps, Matt, the fun that you had as a kid on push bikes. I still remember those days very well, and a lot of fun. And if your son can enjoy that as much with his BMX and that's wonderful. Back to you for a moment. You play guitar, is that right?
Yeah. I learned to play guitar, and I'm still learning. Now I was always fascinated. I was reasonably musical, I suppose, as a kid. I played, of all things, the French horn. My current guitar teacher does not believe that I used to play the French horn because he said they're the little nerdy kids that were picked on all the time. So, I played that as a kid. And then I was very fortunate. The school I went to had a great music program and a really good music teacher there. So we got introduced to a whole wide range of instruments and whatnot. But then I sort of let it go when I joined the military. And then towards the end of my time, I was always fascinated with the banjo. So I picked that up for a few years. But the banjo is not exactly the most social instrument to be banging away on. So certainly not a soothing thing to hear unless you're really good at it.
Bit like the bagpipes.
The last year or so I've picked up the guitar and getting into that and thoroughly enjoying it. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, you'll have to keep us posted on when you do your first song release, Matt Galton's Transition, available soon with guitar. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, we might be waiting a fair while for that, I reckon. But
Now, look, finally, I tell you, this would be of interest to a great number of veterans and people in the general community. You opened up a wine bar with your mates. What happened there?
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate to have a bit of a hiatus after I left the last company I was with. So I had I left them in, when was that, May last year.
That's right.
And I've had the last 9 months free, which has been awesome. And I was just good timing that had a group of mates that were looking at going into this business venture of starting up a wine bar. So I thought, oh yeah, why not? So I jumped in and imminently opening. In fact, next week we had a really nice write up in one of the local entertainment publications here in Brisbane. So yeah, hopefully opening next week. Hopefully it doesn't shut its doors within 2 weeks. If it does, we've had a great time with it. But no, look, I think it's looking real good. So hopefully it opens up soon, yeah.
Can you give it a bit of a plug, Matt? What's its name of the bar, the wine bar that you've opened with some mates, and whereabouts is it exactly? And
tell us. I was being polite without doing the plugging, but if you've opened the door, I'll happily plug. So Sticky Beak Wine Bar. It's on 2 Logan Road at Woolloongabba. So for those from Brisbane, it is directly across the street, as in Stanley Street, from the Gabba. You can't miss it, on the corner of Ipswich Road and Stanley Street there. So, yeah, the whole concept is you can, whether you're a wine connoisseur or whether you're interested in wine or whether anything in between, you can come on in because the focus is wine. So you can literally just get wine by the glass. We've got these really high-end wine machines in there, and you've got a selection of, let me see how many are in there, 70, 80 different wines to choose from. You can either get yourself a tiny little taste or a full glass or a half glass. So no more going out with a group and trying to compromise on what bottle of wine do we want to get, because everyone can go and get their own bottle of wine, and the price points are such that whether you get it by the glass, it's the same as if you bought the bottle, so same rate. So, yeah, look, hopefully it's going to be interesting for people. I'm no wine snob myself. I do like my wines, but we had the investors for the wine bar, we had a bit of a soft opening the other night, and I had a fantastic time walking around testing every different one, and I can guarantee there'll be something for everyone in there. So hopefully opening sometime next week. But yes, Sticky Beak Wine Bar. So if you like your wines or you're interested in wine, tuck it away and come on in. You'll be very welcome.
Fantastic, Matt. It sounds absolutely beautiful. And it's just given me another reason to get up there and see you and have a night at the Sticky Beak Wine Bar on the corner of Stanley Street, near the Gabba, right, in Woolloongabba, obviously.
Right up to the Gabba. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So even if you go to a Big Bash game or you go see the Lions play, after the game, come on over and come in and have a glass.
Yeah, okay, Matt. We will do that. And we hope to get up there soon to have a wine with you at Sticky Beak in Woolloongabba. Matt Galton, it's been an absolute pleasure. You've been here on the Last Post radio show speaking with us about transition. You've given us your background, you've given us your hobbies, and you've given people and listeners some tips about how to help in transition. So we thank you very much for that and look forward to speaking to you again, Matt.
Oh, thanks very much, Greg. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Greg T. Ross and the Last Post Radio Show on Captivate, Apple, and Spotify.